instead of composing predetermined assignments, college composition students could compose whatever they want to compose? What would happen if students could set their own deadlines and grade their own work? Find out as Assistant Professor Mason Joyner and I explore these questions with a few of our fellow English department colleagues. I'm Monica Mankin, and this is the English 101 Experiment. Welcome to the English 101 Experiment Podcast. I'm Monica Mankin, and I'm here with my co-host,
Mason Joyner. We are teachers at Delgado Community College in sunny New Orleans, Louisiana, and today we have a guest.
Yeah. Ari Zeiger, also an English teacher here. Happy to be here.
Yeah, welcome back.
Great to have you again.
Yeah, thanks. It is a beautiful fall day, finally, right? Okay, so yeah, thanks for coming back again. I think you've joined us for each season so far, so it's kind of fun that you've been on this journey with us as we've been documenting our experiment. And this season, we're focusing, our theme is Walk the Way, which comes from the quote from the poet Rumi, "As you walk upon the way appears." And we start every semester now with our students with this thought, this quotation. So we're applying it to this season. And today we thought we'd like to dig into some of the problems, as you said, you love a problem statement, with integrating generative AI into our instruction as writing teachers, and also how this is playing out in the asynchronous classroom, where I think it might be more challenging.
Well, Monica, do you want to start with our question about authenticity here?
Yeah, so I guess for our listener, we have a couple things in front of us, some guiding questions, of course, but then also a list of problem statements that are related to rethinking writing in the age of Gen AI. So I think, yeah, we can kind of run through maybe what are some of the problems that we've noticed. Let's start there. Ari, what are some problems that you've noticed, maybe with students or even maybe faculty thinking about generative AI in our work?
Yeah, I think half of the problem, if not 99.9% of the problem, is that what AI is producing and what is then getting uploaded and submitting under the student's name is then being assessed, is then being assessed for whatever the learning objectives are.
The product is being assessed.
The product is being assessed, but the product is supposed to be downstream or reflective of whatever the learning objectives of are, right? And that is where it gets so complicated, because again, the product that's being uploaded is supposed to represent the latest stage of the thinking, but it's not the latest stage of the thinking.
Right. Yeah.
It's just what was uploaded from a prompt that the students gave the AI.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean the writing is bad or even the product is bad, but it just makes assessment, it just turns assessment on its head. Because even, so if we assess it, let's say, just on its face, if we just, you know, I don't know that it might be quite good actually. But if we then say, but what I'm actually assessing here is not reflective of what has actually gone on thinking-wise.
Right, and has the student actually learned it? Because the product might demonstrate the outcome has been met, but the student is not responsible for the demonstration.
Perfect. Say that one more time. That's
I don't think I can.
That's perfect. That is absolutely perfect.
But it comes to problem number 8 on our list of problems here, which is that assessment still rewards polished products over mindful process, right? So like you said, the assessment has now been turned on its head, and I think that's definitely something we're all grappling with.
Yeah. I think teachers like those seated here, but also we are not alone. Many, many teachers are working hard on integrating AI into their courses. But I'm kind of, what I think one of the things I've been wrestling with lately is that, none of that is going to matter until the people above our pay grade who decide how we're supposed to assess student writing, until they change the rules that we're allowed to play by, you know?
Well, sure. Or we can just change the rules, and because we're the ones on the ground doing the work, and they'll just be like, that sounds great, right? I think that's how a lot of stuff actually happens. But because how would they know what,
how do they know anything?
They're not, if you're not a writing instructor, if you're not, this isn't your discipline, how do you know? Even if the people who are in the discipline teaching it are like, how do we know, right? Like, we're asking ourselves this question right now. So I don't know. I guess, I'm interested in waiting for an administrator to tell
transition,
me what I'm supposed to do.
Transition phases are unstable, yes. I think. And and I don't know. There are small, I think, small cases where changing, revamping our English classes with a process-oriented style in a overall system that still puts the focus on product causes tensions that I think I'm afraid will affect some students in the transition period.
Well, I think you can assess both. I mean, obviously they need to learn to use the tools effectively. And I think one of the problems that I've noticed, there's a kind of a married problem here. And one is the lack of transparency. Like, students are afraid to say they're using it, even though they clearly are. Yeah. Even in a class where I'm like, it's okay. Like, I'm not going to punish you, but you need to learn how to use it effectively. Mm-hmm. And if you aren't just honest about that, then you can't learn, right? You can't go through the process of improvement if you're just going to lie about using it.
Yeah.
So the thing is that what they're producing is not good, right? So the product itself actually sucks because the process isn't there.
Yeah.
Am I making yes. sense?
Well, so this is where, and again, the places where we maybe don't agree are the contact zone that's most fecund, perhaps. Like, it's not that what they're producing isn't good always. This is my perspective on this. Okay. Or it's not that what they're producing isn't better than what they might produce absent having, quote unquote, something else produce it for them. It's that it doesn't reflect or produce learning.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it just destabilizes the whole game.
Well, I guess, so what do you mean it doesn't produce learn? Like, is this an absolute statement you're making, that with AI's presence, there's no learning?
No, can you
clarify that?
Yes, thank you. I mean that in a very narrow sense. I mean, in an instance when, or in an example when, in any subject, right, an assignment is given that has a very kind of stepwise prompt, and read the chapter or whatever it might be, study this, and then X user takes it, puts it into ChatGPT, and then says, write the response. That response is uploaded.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no learning in that.
There's no learning in that.
Right.
But that response might actually be like superior to
whatever
this X user could have produced doing the work, actually. But it's not more beneficial to the learner.
Right. So I guess I would argue that assessment style needs to change. That teacher needs to stop giving that assignment, right? Like, mm-hmm. and so that's where mm-hmm. I think
yeah.
the need for creativity comes mm-hmm. into play, because we need to have a different way
yeah.
of encouraging students to want to learn, right? To engage with the learning process. Yes, we're facing this problem of the product is still the valued thing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I think, you know, mm-hmm. this is an exciting time, I feel like, for maybe people like me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is, like, having anxiety, and I'm like, yes, let's rebuild everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Ari, like, what are you doing in your own classes? And are you teaching online at all this semester? Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. and how's that going?
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, let's see. Just kind of start things out. What am I doing in my own classes, whether it's in person or, you know, whether it's online, virtual, or asynchronous, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm doing is just for at least my in-person face-to-face is a lot more in-class activities,
mm-hmm.
right? And a lot more process, a lot more, and I'll give examples, right? But a lot more like process-based kind of activities where there's not a specific high stakes, I don't know, like detailed prompt
mm-hmm.
that is one size fits all,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I would just kind of, as the beginning, I would just kind of start there.
Okay.
But
almost like the instructions are describing an experience more than a product.
Mm-hmm. So here is maybe an example. So we are reading this piece right now in my English 101 course by David White, and it's called Maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very it's written in a very poetic way, but also with such like technical and almost arcane language, like words like beckon.
Mm-hmm.
Are, and ersatz mm-hmm. are used.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fecund.
Uh-huh. Shout out. and so what we know, one of the things that we're doing is we are looking at the language and we are sharing with one another what mental image is coming up for you.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if nothing is coming up for you, that's fine. Like part of developing your reader response, you're activating your own schema, whatever, is seeing how others do it and learning mm-hmm. and growing. And so I'm modeling that. And then we are kind of going through some of the vocabulary of it and really treating vocabulary as one of the essential pieces that a reader needs to understand
mm-hmm.
if they're going to then understand the sentence, the paragraph, the essay.
Right.
And then I'm helping them with strategies for if you can for breaking down even the word to its root mm-hmm. and then extrapolating from its root to other. So just really trying to make it more of like a rich and robust language experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the text that we're reading is one of the ways in which that's happening. And then they're writing about their experience using the text for the examples, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that sounds great. That sounds fantastic. Yeah. How do you do that online?
Online, yes. Like that.
I mean, I feel the pain that you're experiencing right now.
Oh man, online is so much harder.
Because it already has flattened something, you know, like it's already a problem, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Getting some of these things to translate these experience, like this is experiential learning, right? You're in the classroom, you're
there's so much group work,
tasting the words together, whatever,
and you're sharing with your neighbor,
mm-hmm.
and then we're sharing whole class, mm-hmm. and then they're seeing me model it, mm-hmm. right? And then they're trying it out. It's such
totally different,
So do you have how do you set that up in your online course to try to get at that experience as best we can, mm-hmm. maybe?
This is where I, this is where I'm really struggling, honestly. And I think like a lot of instructors, I'm really struggling because the assignments that I felt really good about that were very process-based and a lot of discussion boards this is the normal pattern that I used to do for my units, okay? We would have our mentor texts, our example texts, our anchor texts, right? And we were going to use them in to kind of read them deeply, closely, and then see how we could imitate them in some way, and usually in some non-obvious way. And then we would break them down to their DNA, and then we would build them back up, right, so that it could be extrapolated. And then I would have them propose their idea. The students would comment in the discussion board, would comment on the different proposed topics or ways that they were going to imitate the piece. And then they would get comments on that, and then they would we'd have a mid-module check-in to see where they were, and I would give them feedback on their mid-project check-in, and then they would post their draft in the discussion board, get feedback on that. Right?
Would you meet with them on Zoom for that feedback that you give? Is that the check-in, or is it through like the grading section?
It's through text. Like they upload it, and then I respond to it.
Yeah.
But some students come to my office hours, come to my office
or
hours.
Or
Zoom office hours. And then they post their draft, right? And now it's like it's iterating. They get feedback on that. And then they do their final draft. They get feedback on that also. And also from me along the way. And then they do one of my favorite things is they do a post-module reflection, which is always like so helpful for me to see because it helps me improve the module.
Right.
And it helps me understand them as a writer even more. But that doesn't work anymore. Why? Because the comments themselves are written by ChatGPT. Hi, Juan. I really liked your draft on... And it's
great that you're holding space with this topic. I don't know, like, the training model that... Where some of this language comes from.
You know, so like that's not helpful for Juan, but it's also not helpful for, the person didn't even read it.
Yeah.
Who ostensibly is providing the feedback, you know. So that way of helping students write, quote unquote, major papers, right?
Yeah.
Does not work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Yeah. So I'm in flux.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, same. Mason.
Yes.
Tell us about your online teaching experiences.
I leapt off that ship head first a few years ago. No, I
like even before generative AI.
Even
became
before Gen AI.
So tell us why. What led you to that decision?
I mean, exactly what y'all are describing. I mean, but even before AI, it was so. It was so. Soul sucking.
And
as you started describing it, it's so different from the really what can be a really wonderful, beautiful experience face to face in the classroom. I just that's where I wanted to put my energy in. So I was lucky, I think, that there is a lot of demand for online classes in the department. So I can easily ask Shay to our department chair to not offer me any. Online classes
sections,
and that works because a lot of people do want them, which I'm perfectly fine with.
Yeah, you can have them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think especially our English 110 online, we need to stop offering it asynchronously, in my opinion, because those students need the classroom experience, the community that's there. It's just... like nearly, it's not sustainable to try to replicate it. Like I've tried with like mandatory Zoom conferences and I'm conferencing with like 40 students, you know.
I think I suggested that the first semester it was offered online because I was teaching 110 online way in the beginning of that course.
It's such a part of our experiment in the classroom, those conferences. And so I was like, I want to start integrating this stuff asynchronously, but I was just like, anything, if for me, part of the definition of a successful curriculum is that it can be done by other instructors, right? Like they can adapt it according to their style, but it's not something that's just like, Monica's insane and she's just always on Zoom, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I was just like, I can't do, like, this is too many conferences. Yeah. And talking with students over the computer is also not the same as sitting with them side by side in your office. Yeah. And those, I think there's something, it's different too, because like I teach a literature class online this semester and they're great, but they're also at just a different point in their educational journey where like they're closer to their goal. Like they, you know, they want to do real work. And mm-hmm. so I don't know. In a way, it gave me some hope because I was like, okay, good. Like, they're not all cheating. But yeah, definitely at the 101 and the asynchronous 110 level, mm-hmm. there is this just like, I just want to get the work done. Shortcut, shortcut, shortcut. Turning in trash, basically. And like I said, not being transparent about the usage. So I've really flipped it. So they have to use AI now, and they have to be trans. Like, they have to show the process that is the actual project. And what I'm assessing is how deeply they've engaged with the tool. So did they push it further to get better answers? Mm-hmm. And then they have to annotate their chats as well to tell me about why did they ask that follow-up question? What did they think of the response that they got? So far, okay. Mm-hmm. I think some people will probably try to AI their reflective annotations.
Very meta.
Of course, mm-hmm. you know, like. That's very meta. I don't think that's the majority, though, to be honest. Yeah.
What do you think about having them turn in like an exported chat, the full chat?
They do. They include a link, but they also, in order to annotate it, I just have them copy it into Google.
I see.
But they have to share the link as well so I can go back to the original chat and see, make sure this is.
Which is a little bit harder, probably, to fake.
You know, and I don't know if I have the headspace to try to worry about that right now, you know. But
not impossible, but harder, probably.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to flip it so, like, they have to write their own prompt. We workshopped prompts, right? So they put out their shitty first draft of the prompt they were going to use with ChatGPT or Gemini for this style experiment mm-hmm. that we were doing. And yeah, so they had to go through that process. They got feedback. They had to go back and respond to my feedback as part of a reflection journal before they could move forward to mm-hmm. actually engage with the tool.
And are you experiencing any resistance from your students about being forced to use it?
No, not yet. Not this semester. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there will be students that try to say. But some of them have said, too, that they were resistant in the beginning because they didn't understand how it could be useful to them. Mm-hmm. But after reading like the AI guide for students that we have, like they're like, oh, this makes sense. And it's like, I don't have, you know, it doesn't have to replace my work. It can support me like this, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. Those are the noodles I'm throwing at the wall to see if they stick.
Ari, do you have any even just like an assignment that's integrated that they have to do?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't either at the moment. I think that they have to, yeah. Because I've this semester, like more than any other semester I've ever in very recent memory, I guess, because it's new. But I've been getting so much, even out of the classroom, just hearing students talk with such anxiety about having to use it. I, of course, opened the gate for that discussion in class, and students, I think, in every section where we had that discussion were very vocal about being opposed to Gen AI, full stop. And yeah, you know, I've had like say a student in 102 saying I'm looking forward to not have to being able to write without Gen AI in this class, just like sharing their expectations for the course. I've you know heard students say you know my teacher's making me use AI and I don't love it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm grappling with that right now mm-hmm. about making them use it.
I mean, I think. Forcing them. I don't like the idea of forcing them.
Yeah.
And I think if a student, like in this class, if they were like, I'm really not comfortable, I really don't want to use it, I would give them an alternative. But I feel like before, when it was definitely left up to being an option, mm-hmm. students would say that they're not using it, but they are. So I was like, I'm sick of this horse shit. Like, stop it. Yeah. So that's why I was like, no.
It makes sense.
You're using it. And this is how you're going to use it. And I'm trying to figure out, how do we let learning still occur through using the tool, right? And so, yeah, it's all big, messy experiment right now, I feel like. So I don't know if it's working, you know.
Sure.
I don't know if I even know how to assess what's happening yet, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That it was the assessment issue. And we, I kind of said this, I think, like last time, but in 15 months, what keyboard or interface is just going to be just automatically like sending a wave through their text that just sort of massages it towards the empty fluency, you know,
empty fluency. There is a
term. I'm borrowing your pen.
Gotta write that down.
Yeah, I gotta write that down.
Empty fluency.
Yeah.
I mean, like the little machine that when you're driving some cars, if you go over the line, it like corrects you and puts you back, you know, but that for writing.
Yeah. And you don't even kind of see it.
So what about, our colleague Jackson Moss has made this case that, like, you know, a lot of these students, like, the writing that they're going to need to do in their workplace or their lives is going to be mostly this transactional kind of writing. Like, they're not going to go be creative writers and artists, you know.
Yeah.
And so if we're thinking about it along those lines, then does it really matter if they don't, like, if the tool just becomes the way it's done? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess the reason why it matters is when I'm teaching writing, what I'm doing is helping students develop as readers,
right?
As readers of professional writing, and in so doing, writing about it and teaching them how to then become a writer of their own prose. If you can be sensitive, that's why I think, like, even, you know, that's why I think that, like, teaching poetry is such an important thing to do, because I'm not saying at the college level it's so important, but in K through 12 it's so important, because what you're doing is you're having humans attend to everything that could possibly be attended to. Nothing is off the table.
Right.
Not sound, not orthography, not the kind of way that you're arranging. Right, everything's on the table, right? And so I want when you're a writer, everything is on the table too, and that's where I guess I disagree. Is that, like, how are you going to help a student develop as a reader? All of my writing assignments are reader response. Are text based, not in like some like text based constructed response. I don't mean that, but like we are reading and then we are responding
to what we've read.
To what we read. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so how do we then assess reading comprehension?
That's another problem, because students can just upload whatever text you've assigned them to Notebook LM and have it. Create a podcast or a presentation or do the outline or
summary,
write the
or
response.
A bullet point. Yeah. Do you want a short, a medium, or a long summary?
Yeah. So again, it's like,
these are open questions.
Another problem statement.
These are open questions. So I hear, you know, people who say for the workforce, it's transactional writing, but what does transactional reading there's no such thing as transactional reading.
But you said something that I think taps into a much larger problem. And I think our students are not reading poetry in K through 12. Like, they get to our class and they're like, they've never written a poem before. They have this very like archaic idea of what poetry even is, because that exposure to language that you're talking about is not part of our common education in this country. So that's also what we're combating here and why it's so tempting for students to just lean into these tools, because the world does not give a hoot if they are literate or not.
And I want to, just for any like listeners, like turning, like listening to this, no one here at this table is saying we need, quote unquote, to teach more poetry in K through 12. What we're saying, what we're saying is that we want the readings that students are reading to have much more rich and robust language than the quote unquote expository text that is written by a textbook company for the purposes of a reading comprehension test.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think I can see, you know, who knows what our future looks like. But I don't think I can see our job moving any closer in that any further in that direction towards interesting language. You know, I mean, yeah, I think you're right about transactional writing is the idea here that if we are workforce trainers, that is the training they need. Mm-hmm. And I think this like platonic ideal of an English class, like what is an English class? I think that's probably not going to be, I think that might be on its way out, right? That idea of an English class.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it depends like how educational institutions decide to respond. I think a lot of them won't respond very well. And so, yes, that there will be like a wave of job loss and restructuring, right? But I think there are also people out there that see the value of having a no-tech or low-tech education and having that human interaction, that social interaction that is part of the learning process that we're kind of talking about here today.
I see that going to the private sector.
Yes,
I think,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. It's good. Mm-hmm. That's what will happen. Yeah. And it's already happening in some places.
Yeah.
So, you know, if people don't demand these things, though, they will never happen. And that's the problem, too, is that I think also students are afraid to demand things. Like, they don't know that they have a right to a better education than what they are selling themselves, right? What that narrative is, that I just need to jump through these hoops and get this degree and get this job and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's like so beaten into them, this narrative, that when they get here, it's like you have to help them unlearn some of this stuff and be open-minded and understand that there is a process, growth, you know, have some growth mindset, stop focusing so much on the grade, like that outcome, and focus on the goals that you're going to accomplish to get there. And so it's like a whole mindset shift that needs to occur as part of this transition.
And as I've alluded to, I think my main source of anxiety lately, I mean, in regards to this, is the tension between, the need for that mindset shift being out of alignment with what our student learning objectives currently are. And like, you know, students have to produce X hundred of words of polished formal writing. I don't know. It's just, and for the sake of accreditation and transferability, that pressure has been weighing a lot more on me lately. I think, making sure that when a student leaves my class, and they can show someone at another institution what they've done, and that person go, yeah, good. And not, what in the heck were you doing over there at Delgado? What's going on? You know, like, what kind of education is this? These aren't essays, you know? I don't know. That's been on my mind a lot. I feel like we need more explicit permission to really throw out the script and experiment.
From who? Like, from whom?
from someone higher than us who can talk to those other institutions if need be, you know?
Well, I think that's why we go to conferences, though, too, because if we're like, here's something we're doing that feels like it's working in these ways, right? Like, our experiment, I think, has created a stronger community in the classroom. Students are producing, by and large, like, much higher quality work. They are choosing projects that are not easily AI-able, right? Like, they can't just go plug in a prompt and boom, my project's done. So there is still this level of learning going on while all this chaos is happening around us. And so, I think sharing that in the form of scholarship, in the form of this podcast, in going to conferences. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you can start to get people to think about
a grassroots movement.
I mean, that's all you can do, unless you want to go bang on the, you know, the LCTCS.
Yeah, of course.
Take a drive to Baton Rouge. And...
No, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. It does. This is where it starts. Yeah. In these conversations right here.
Right now.
Yeah.
You mentioned how you quote Rumi on the first day. Mm-hmm. What I say to my students on the first day of class is, this is what we are not here to do. We are not here to have Mr. Zeiger tell you how to set up your essay.
Mm-hmm.
That's, we will talk about organization. We will talk about structure. We will. Those are important things. Those things are so important. But that is not the dominant thing that we are here to do. What we are here to do is to maximize our potential with language.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
I like that.
Yeah, really like that.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is downstream from that. And so that, I say that. I say it again on Wednesday. I say it again on Friday. And then I thread it into the mini lessons. So I say, okay, so like, given that this course is about maximizing our potential with language, let's look here at the Man in the Arena passage from Roosevelt, and let's see what is on offer for us, whether it's him using, you know, vocabulary like a word like the word mar,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Or you know, or just the way that he is, you know, using short his sentence variety, right? Short, long, whatever it might be, right? So that you know, that's kind of what I'm thinking about, and how that kind of connects to this larger conversation is, you know, ChatGPT, AI, large language models, etc. That kind of robs the apprentice student of maximizing their potential with language, taking that endless first step, right? And I always tell my students, I'm on this journey too. Like, I'll be a stronger writer, reader a year from now than I am today. Mm-hmm. Because today I'm a stronger writer, reader than I was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And and so the same is, and the same for you students, right?
Well, I mean, I do like the idea of these embedded, AI embedded assignments that sort of, that really, I think, sort of play into that journeyman kind of style, where, you know, at no point is the AI doing your job for you. You are finding out ways to help. You are finding out ways to get it to help you do your job better, right? And so I feel like that there's still room for that journeyman style of writing. I do find, though, that I feel like it elongates the process a lot when there are so many. And now go to the AI again at this point and reflect on that, and then go to the AI again at this point and reflect on that. Monica, thoughts on that?
I think it just depends how you're setting that up. It can become overwhelming, but I think that's just something that's going to have to get figured out through trial and error, which is like what I'm trying to do right now.
Yeah, no, you're doing a great job of it, by the way. Yeah.
But like, yeah, I took a style thing that I've done forever, but I was like, okay, instead of asking them to make this comparison, because I know I'm going to get all AI papers, right? I'm going to ask, I gave them like two options so they could ask. They could pick which tool, Gemini or ChatGPT. We've already done experimenting with both of them. So the first option was like to prompt it to analyze the style of Kincaid's Ugly Tourist and Nye's Mint Snowball from the point of view of a poet or a social media influencer, or like pick a persona that's sort of going to give it an angle, right? Give it a perspective. And then they had to pick from the different style, the different elements of style that we had talked about, to help focus, and the ones that they chose needed to be kind of relevant to the persona that they chose for the AI to have. And they have a specific formula that I've asked them to use, to like the Jeff Su formula. It's just an easy way to kind of think about prompting AI. The other one was that they could prompt it to rewrite a section of Mint Snowball in the style of Kincaid or vice versa. And then they had to ask follow-up questions. And I did quantify that where I was like, if you only ask two follow-up questions, like that's a C, right? Like mm-hmm. you got to mm-hmm. do better than that if you want an A or B on this project. Mm-hmm. And I keep just trying to hammer in that the process is the project. Because mm-hmm. I did have a student, like the day after they were supposed to annotate the instructions for this project that was going to take us 2 weeks, he's like emailing me, where do I submit the final project? I'm finished. And I was like, no, you're not. You need to go back to the first step and read the instructions again, right? Like, yeah, and so I've already gotten some. We're at the end of this now where they've submitted. Mm-hmm. The first thing they had to do is submit the link to their Google Doc with their annotations.
Yeah.
So, and then I need to be able to make sure I can see that. And mm-hmm. then they just get like a check that that's done. And then they can move on to a self-evaluation that I've created where they have to assess their own engagement with the tool.
Thought here that came to mind. So in assignments like that, you know, where again the process is the project. devil's advocate about, you know, product putting product first, right? Is when you end up with a product, you have something to be proud of, mm-hmm. right? I did this. I can mm-hmm. point to it. I can hold it. It's right here. I did that. You can't really hold and point to a process as much and say, "Cool, I did this. Here's what I did," you know?
But this is building toward
a thing. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the next thing we're going to do, I'm calling it the Digital Reputation Project.
Shout out.
Because I think a lot of these students do not think 1 second about how they come across in the internet mm-hmm. environment mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. And so I don't get angry. I get creative mm-hmm. about how mm-hmm. I'm going to deal with this, right? Yeah. So like... Yeah, so I'm going to ask them to produce like a personal piece of writing. I have to kind of work that out. An academic piece of writing and a professional piece of writing. And they can use AI to produce those products. But we're going to talk about like what does it mean? What does quality mean then if we're going to use AI to mm-hmm. do this for us? And how is your work then going to be distinct from your classmate who's also using AI? And talk about this problem of flattening. Mm. But they're also going to have reflection journals along the way, like just like whether it's like a little video or audio, however they want to submit that, where they're talking to me about the process of using the tool to create these pieces of products, right, that will represent them. In the world, in the virtual world, right? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is great because normally I feel like I speak for all of us. We would never be for sort of arguing that like student work or students should be judged against one another. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not. But that question is a great question. Just in terms of like to surface the problem with AI writing mm-hmm. is to say in a speculative world, right? In a hypothetical world where we didn't give you a grade, we literally did like the bell curve, mm-hmm. grading on a curve, mm-hmm. like, and that's how we did grades. Like, okay, right. we just mm-hmm. this is the best one that was submitted, and then we just work from there. Mm-hmm. Now, are you fine just getting the response that ChatGPT gave you and submitting it mm-hmm. and calling that quality?
Right.
Or are you then having a second order thought of, yeah, but is this an above average response? Mm-hmm. That is the question I don't think they ever ask.
No, but but I don't know how often that conversation happens generally.
True.
Outside of AI, right? Mm-hmm. Like were there part of that discussion of how do we evaluate this? What is making this high quality versus low quality?
Has ChatGPT given y'all two responses and say which
it'll
one do you prefer?
That, yeah,
and that's an interesting thing where I'm like, I guess this one, you know, it's like,
they're never like that different.
Yeah,
I know. Cause then you have to slow down and you're like, what is the difference?
They're never like that different.
And, so, and it actually annoys me when it does it. Cause I was like, gosh, I'm in the middle of the flow. Right. Yeah, and then now I got to look at this carefully.
Where do you think that conversation is going to go? When the students are saying, you know, how, if you've both used ChatGPT for this, how are yours going to be distinct? Mm-hmm. Where do you expect that conversation to go?
I really have no idea.
Okay.
I mean, I would think it would come back to what we just, where we talked about style choices and keeping that in mind, right? Is that how do you want this tool to be used to represent you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I think I just have to put the question out there. I don't really know how they'll respond. But I'm kind of excited for it, but I'm like, I have a lot of work to do to get those next few modules ready. So
I mean, I love asking questions that I don't know the answer to, asking students questions I don't know the answer to.
It's like, let's find out, right? Yeah. Because if I'm not learning right now, there's no way I can ever lead anyone through this jungle, right? Yeah. It's like, So I just decided this is the semester I'm throwing everything out the window and we're just going to dive in and see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So
walked away.
Yeah.
But that question of when the student is looking at the response that they got, looking might even be too generous of a word. When the student receives the response that they're going to upload under their own name, what are they using, if anything, to judge the quality of that response? That somehow, I feel like we've arrived at something with that question.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing for me to write down, because I think we should have some kind of discussion as part of the early process for this to come up with some criteria together, right? What makes a quality response from AI.
Wow. So the student becomes the teacher and the AI becomes the student, right? I mean, in a sense.
From
AI, And I think right now, like what they have learned so far, as I can tell, is that they have realized that if the prompt is not good, the output from AI will not be good. So that really the AI is only as good as the user. And I think that has motivated some of them to realize that they still need to be a writer. They still need to learn how to write better because they can't use the tool effectively if they don't know what they're doing with language, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, anyone who engages, any adult who engages with AI significantly in a serious way will often enough tell the AI, no, that's not what I'm looking for.
Right. Yeah. A lot. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
It's like training a dog. No.
Mm-hmm.
You're way off here. Stop tone poming. it starts giving me like some like very flat. Mm-hmm. Stop tone poming. You know, I'll tell it.
I'm still in the okay, but let's try. That's my mode.
Oh,
instead of no.
Yeah.
It'll give me some. Okay. Anyways, we're getting off, but I'll say no. This is pure glaze.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Start over. Ultra concise. Let's see.
Yeah.
Because I use it for different types of projects. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes I'll be trying to work on something and it will start bringing in stuff from a whole nother thing. I'm like, we're not working on that right now.
Yes.
Stop. Using it is such a learning experience. So that's what it is. Like, that, like, let's just think about it and not mindlessly poop out whatever it says and turn it in. like let's just not do that.
Yeah.
And as we sort of maybe like slouch towards the end of this, I just want to kind of remind myself slash us that, and I think I said this at some point, like if someone wrote your paper for you, another sentient being wrote your paper for you, you know, do you, should you get credit for that? Well, obviously the answer is like, no. You know, well, if an AI wrote your paper for that, for you, should you get credit for that? Why is the answer yes, exactly? You know,
mm-hmm. Well, I think it has to do with what degree did AI mm-hmm. do the paper for you. If it wrote the whole damn thing, then no, yeah. zero. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if it was an assistant to your process and you've documented that, mm-hmm. right, that's very different. So I think those distinctions have to be made clear to the student. And mm-hmm. I like that comparison of like, yeah, if your friend wrote your paper for you, yeah. that's a zero. If you
work together on it, you're collaborative, like you're both
and you're
authors.
Both giving credit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just.
Yeah. Or you took it to the writing center mm-hmm. and you guys really rolled up your sleeves and got in there and worked yeah. on it. Yeah. And yeah, maybe the writing coach. But like at least you were there yeah. and you were learning and you were mm-hmm. seeing how they were doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. The writing mm-hmm. coach gets an acknowledgement maybe if it's published. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So these are all really good things to be talking to them about anyway, mm-hmm. is that mm-hmm. idea of, well, what happens with collaboration? What does that question of originality yeah. and like yes. to what extent does something become cheating, right? Mm-hmm.
And again, like yeah. so many people want to criticize AI work as "quote unquote" slop, mm-hmm. and it can be, but in an undergraduate or even in primary school, secondary school, that slop is definitionally going to "quote unquote" be at least more polished or more mm-hmm. fluent seeming syntactically than the eighth grader's work or the freshman mm-hmm. and the college freshman's work. So the problem is not necessarily always with the thing that was uploaded,
right?
Trying to avoid using the word writing, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. The thing that was automated.
The submission. Uh-huh.
The yeah. submission. But it is with the claim of authorship.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is the claim of learning that didn't happen.
It's a lie.
That didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there is that. That's why, though, impressing upon students the importance of authorship, the wanting to have ownership over your work and mm-hmm. your mind is so important
yes.
to what we do every day. Yeah. And I think I just want to go back to something yeah. that my student who was on our last podcast, I think she said, which is just that in reading like the poetry and the different texts that we read, that to see that humans were making this kind of work before there was even AI was really inspiring for her to know, like, I can do it without this tool,
yeah.
right? So, again, little glimmers of hope mm-hmm. here and there, mm-hmm. right, through this crazy time of transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful, like, glimmers yeah. of
glimmers
hope.
Of hope.
Glimmers of hope. I have a student this semester who this is my little glimmer of hope. I'm going to take that as a kind of closure ribbon that mm-hmm. we're putting around it, right? Like my glimmer of hope, right, Mason, we're going to hit you.
I've
for
got
your,
one, yeah.
All right, is my student this semester kind of caught on that I love Marcus Aurelius and, mm-hmm. and the sort of the writings of the Stoics, and she got a copy of Epictetus. Mm-hmm. And every day after class, she brings in her copy of, I guess, like the writings of Epictetus.
Maybe the Enchiridion, the handbook.
The Enchiridion, mm-hmm. that's what it is. And she'll show me what she underlined. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit after class
nice.
about what she underlined. Yeah. And it's just, I just feel so lucky every time we engage in that mm-hmm. way.
Yeah.
So that's my little yeah. glimmer of hope.
I've got a student in English 110. For her big project, she's writing, I think when I checked in yesterday, her first draft is 19 pages on the ethics of artificial intelligence. So so that's, I don't know, I'm excited to dive into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing.
So good.
Yeah. Well, that was a great conversation. Yeah. Thank you, Ari, for joining us again. And
happy to.
Yeah.
All right. And
thank you, listener. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the English 101 Experiment. Special thanks to Christopher Nicotera, instructor of music business at Delgado Community College, for his recording assistance. All music heard during this episode comes from the Free Music Archive. Specific titles and artists are listed on the English 101 Experiment website.